Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock Live Radio, powered by ETV Live. Sean joining you, as I do every week, for a limited amount of time left. And joining me this week, we have Doug, as always. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Sean.
And joining us tonight for the first time, because we don't have Mike with us, he's still buried in work. But tonight, we do have with us Kevin Neely, our IndyCar guy. Hello, Kevin. Welcome.
Holly ho, Sean. How's it going?
Very good, very good. Thank you for coming on. And we'll have a little bit more of an announcement kind of thing later with you. And joining us tonight, a very special guest we have with us, SCCA Racing. Just words can't even describe, honestly. machine. And also Rally America driver, driven in WRC events, Pikes Peak Hill Climb, excuse me. We have joining us Brianne Korn. Hello, Brianne.
Hello, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Yes, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a true honor. And if I do say so, you have set a world record as the first ever female racing driver to come on our show.
Excellent. That sounds like a good record to have.
It is a good record. It is a good record, given, I mean, well, I don't know. We've been trying to have you on the show a long time, so we've just, Doug was always yelling at me to call, make it happen.
Yes, I was.
And I, for whatever reason, I was not snubbing you. I just didn't really know how to make it happen. So, which is funny that Doug asked me to do it, and then he mentions the idea of having you on the show on Friday or something of that nature, and here we are. So I don't understand why you weren't doing it, Doug.
Well, you were a rally guy.
I was. But times have changed. Jobs have changed as we restructure and prepare for 2013. But it is good to have you, Brianne. Doug, I'm going to let you take over because you have all the questions, you have all the master plan, and then I will obviously banter and tell her how much better she is than you at all aspects of racing, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, Brianne, let's start with where I usually start with most of our drivers that we interviewed for the first time, and tell us how it is that you got involved into motorsports in the first place.
Well, that question goes back to the summer of 2004, and I was in Italy taking my last two classes for my undergrad degree in photography, and I had what I tell people is my epiphany on the side of a mountain in Italy, where I stumbled across a mountain pass and wound up in a pack of sports cars with two caged rally cars with us in. Screaming up a mountain pass, and found myself there after it was all over, thinking about what I was going to do when I got home and graduated, and poised the question, if I could do anything, if I won the lottery, what would I do? And my answer was rally driver, and I said, well, then that's what I'm going to go do. And just completely took a left turn in life and set out to do that, and then found out how expensive that was. And that might not be something I could just jump straight into, and then found SCCA and autocross, and following the Covey thing, I sharpened a tool, and when opportunity came, I was ready. So that's kind of how it started. I was in my first SCCA autocross a month after that on the side of the mountain.
Wow. Yeah, and we've been here at Open Pack, we've been talking more frequently about autocross. Sean has been autocrossing for a while. I just got into it this year after going to do some photography. And wow, it's surprising how accessible that form of motorsport is, how easy it is for someone to jump in and have fun. But the first time that I mentioned how we met was in 2010 at the 100 Acre Wood Rally, or the Rally America event down in Salem, Missouri. And I remember you telling me at the time that if you had the opportunity, you'd lay down the camera in a heartbeat if it meant getting into a rally car full time. And I'll be honest, I thought about that. And it's like, would I do that? And at the time, I don't think I could have. I didn't have confidence enough in my skills. Of course, you had championships under your belt at that point, or at least significant competition under your belt at that point. And so perhaps I underestimated, because I'll be doggone if next year there you were in the 968. I think you had a Subaru Impreza RS in open lights.
That's correct.
and your goal was to win the Open Lights National Championship, and you decimated the field that year, at least what I saw at 100 Acre. It was complete decimation and domination, besting everyone by 10 minutes, which is huge in rally. I mean, 10 minutes. So take us through that year, 2010, doing photography on top of your day job, and how the plan finally materialized to do a full season in Open Lights.
Well, I bought a car for $400 off of Craigslist, and when I talked to you that summer or that time in 2010, I already had that car sitting in my garage, but it was just sitting there because I didn't have all the parts and everything, and I slowly saved everything up. And at the end of the year, finally had everything I needed to put it together, and a three-year project finally was culminated in a six-month period. And lo and behold, by the end of the year, I had a cage car and was ready to put it all together. That was a lot of work. That's a lot of late nights with lots of friends and family, and lots and lots and lots of help.
So throughout that year, what was the travel like? How did you cobble? Before the show, Sean and I were talking with you about our dream, a bit of a pipe dream of competing at least at 100 Acre. But as I think about this more seriously, more realistically, the thing that really seems to be the big inhibitor is the travel. With having a day job, how did you arrange for the time off to do the travel and come up with the funds to actually pay for all the travel expenses, the gas, the hotels, and the food, and all that?
Well, the time off, I have a very unique job. I run a 400-seat multimedia classroom for Texas State University, and I have a unique opportunity to work overtime for special events and things like that. And that's how I save up the time to take off to go racing, because a lot of times I'll work 50-plus hours a week so that I can take that time off when need be. And they've been very accommodating and supportive of all my racing, so that's been pretty amazing, and a very unique place, which I don't know that I could ever find in another environment.
Well, now, in addition to the Rally America efforts, you've now been up Pikes Peak two times, if I remember. You've been to Baja. You've competed in...
You were on a motorcycle.
Say again?
I said I've been up four times to Pikes Peak. The first two I took a motorcycle.
Oh, wow. Okay, we got to hear that story.
That's shocking.
That's seriously sketch right there. How did you end up doing this on a motorcycle?
Well, my good friend Dave Carapathian, he's won Pikes Peak like three times, and one of my best friends, Wes Ayler, was his crew chief for those years when he did so well. And that year in 2008, they called me from Pikes Peak, and they said, you should be here, you could do this, you could be right with them. And they just were torturing me 3 days before the race, and I'm like, it's too late, I can't come. So the next year, when I heard that they'd not paved over that summer break, that it was still 50-50, I felt this real burn to get there and get a piece of the mountain before the dirt was gone. And to me, that's like the heart of Pikes Peak, was the dirt. And I so desperately wanted to be a part of that, and I wound up picking my headlights and taillights off of my street motorcycle I'd built to do Rally Moto, and took that to Pikes Peak. And I tell everyone I went as a lamb to the slaughter, because I knew that the motorcycle wasn't where my strength was, but I also knew that Pikes Peak was a mountain that required you to know it before you could really run it. And so I just figured this was at very least reconnaissance for when I went back with the car, which I would do much better than I had hoped. And so that's how it went, and I actually wound up qualifying mid-pack and probably would have done that or better on race day, but I killed my motor by I made a small error in changing the oil, and that was it. It was dying before I even left the start line.
This wasn't a small error like forgetting to replace the drain plug.
No,
Okay, okay.
It's an index filter. It's inside the case, and
Oh,
if you
okay.
put it in cockeyed, the oil journals don't line up, and I basically ran a motorcycle all the way to the top of the mountain without a drop of oil moving through it. So
Oh.
it's pretty impressive.
Engine over.
Actually, it is when you think about it.
So, compare driving or riding Pike's Peak there on the motorcycle to then in your specifically prepped hill climb car that you did later. Understanding that, you know, I guess the last time it was all tarmac, and I agree, that's a real shame. But compare those two experiences for us.
Well, they're really different because the motorcycles, you would leave the line five abreast, drag race style, and it could be super aggressive going into a corner with the cliffs and everything, fighting someone for position for the line. And whereas in the car, you're more rally style. It's you're not dealing with someone else interacting with you. It's you and your co-driver in the road. And so that way it's more kind of a meditation than a bar fight.
Can I say that riding a motorcycle up Pike's Peak racing other people is probably the sketchiest thing I've ever heard of in my entire life?
Oh, no, it's pretty awesome. I the other side of the motorcycle versus the car is that you have the co-driver in the car who can, if you don't have them memorized, he can tell you where to go and you can pretty much nail it. And on a motorcycle, if you don't have it memorized, you have to lift because otherwise bad things happen. And so finally one day I was getting really irritated with that. And so one of the pro guys comes barreling by me and I'm like, well, I'll just follow him. That was a mistake. We almost both went off at Cogpit. And
yikes.
So that kind of thing in the practice and the camaraderie of the motorcyclist is pretty amazing. It's definitely in a league of its own. But the car is definitely where my talent lies and where my confidence are, and I can get so much closer to the perfect run in the car than I can on the motorcycle. To me, that's what that really is, the decision maker in the end, which way to go.
Well, since all this, you've gone beyond just racing rally and rallycross to really trying to promote rallycross. I remember seeing on your Facebook, Brianne Korn Racing, that you're really working on building and coming up with a venue to do rallycross there in Texas and promote rallycross in Texas. How's that been going? Have you been seeing more and more participants there locally and in your region?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had no program until this year. And I basically have tried several times with other people to help bring this around. And so finally one day out of frustration, I've been trying to put myself in a position where I can have access to a piece of land and put a track on it. And I've been working on this for a long time. And so finally it all happened and I said, okay, we're going to do this now. And I started building a track and taking photos of it, posting it to Facebook. And I didn't even have the track finished. And James Wilson started Texas Rally Sport and calls me up and is like, well, when can we have the first race? I'm like, well, let me see if I can't finish the track. So it's been an ongoing thing all year long. We've got road equipment now, and we've got a pretty nice semi-permanent rallycross track, and we have monthly events with anywhere from 20 to 30 or 40. We even one time we had 50 people, competitors,
nice,
show up. And actually this last event, this last weekend, we finally went through the end of our box of 1,000 wristbands. So we've had 1,000 people on site since the beginning of the year. So I feel pretty good about the strength of the program here. I think the record at the SCCA Rallycross until this year was 2 people from the Southwest Division, and I think we had 14 this year.
Well, I noticed that you brought two under the Brianne Korn Racing banner yourself, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, those several people actually, and I don't know that everyone actually flew the flag on their sponsorship, but a lot of people have helped put together the stuff that we've done and help work on the track and help build the cars and keep things running. And so to return that, we helped several people out with nationals this year and went to great lengths to make sure everyone that wanted to go had the opportunity to be there and have something to drive. So that worked out really, really well.
And I just want to say that right there, I mean, that right there is exactly what motorsports in the United States needs. At that grassroots, you have somebody bending over backwards to make sure that you are, you know, not only promoting the style of racing, promoting an event, and having, you know, that track there. I mean, that's just such a great story, honestly, and something that I think at the very base level of motorsport, I mean, it's just, that's the kind of stuff you like to hear, and just good on you for getting all of that set up and really facilitating that. I mean, that's just really a good news story, honestly.
Oh, thank you very much. I've worked a lot to put this together, and it means a lot that people care, and I just know what makes me happy at the end of the day, and I think that is applicable to other people as well, and that's just why I'm here. I just want to give everyone the opportunity that I wanted to be here when I started racing and wasn't.
Well, rallycross is a bit like autocross in that it's very easy to get into once people realize how to get into it. So how would you advise someone who's interested in rallycross to actually get started?
I'd say the biggest avenue in the United States is going to, of course, be through SCCA. There's going to be a number of different local clubs. We have Texas Rally Sport, which is run by James Wilson and does a really, really good job of making it simple and accessible. Our rules are not complicated. Pretty much any street legal car that would pass a safety inspection is a viable race car. And I mean, we've seen everything. We've got a guy that runs a bone stock Miata on 17-inch wheels and wins and doesn't break his car. And, you know, it's possible. It's that level of accessibility. You don't have to have a car. You just have to have a place. And I know that that NASA has some rallycross arms out there. And so that would be the main place I would go. I would check SCCA rallycross, I'd check NASA rallycross, and see what's going on in your area. If you're in Texas, we have Texas Rally Sport, and that's on Facebook as well. It's real easy to get into.
Could I ask the question that our producer JD?
Yeah,
had,
yeah.
Doug?
Go ahead.
All right. Well, yeah. Obviously, the surge of females in motorsport this day and age. I mean, it's almost just commonplace anymore. Vice what it used to be, obviously. Now, is the acceptance of a female driver in rally any different than like any other forms of racing, such as like something like a NASCAR or an open wheel? He references that a lot of the NASCAR fans have a hard time dealing with having a hard time dealing with Danica Patrick for whatever reason. You know, for you and your experiences actually in rally, I mean, you've raced at all levels, whether it be, you know, Rally America, SCCA, you've competed in the WRC. I mean, what's the kind of reception that you get as being kind of a female driver and really for you kind of breaking that barrier? Because, I mean, if you look at it, we haven't seen a female rally driver that's been like world stage as it was like since somebody like Michelle Mouton, obviously, from way back. I mean, how is your experience as being a female driver on the circuit? How is that?
It's been really good. You know, I've done everything from Baja to Bonneville to Texas Mile and everything in between. And especially early on, I will tell you that I've had some pretty rude things from time to time. And I've never had any even remotely resembling that kind of experience in rally. And I don't know. It just seems to me that rally draws a different type of person that just seems to be a little bit ahead of the pace.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you look at some of the, I mean, it's really if it's the action sport of motorsport, and when you look at it, I mean, I think people just kind of realize, well, heck, if she's got the guts to go out there and do that, who are we to make any kind of a judgment on it? Because I mean, some of that stuff in rally, especially, can be quite sketchy.
Yeah, you definitely can't be afraid of what you're doing in rally, or you will wind up getting yourself hurt. But that, to me, is the part I like. It's threading the needle with no room for error, and it's just you. And if you get it wrong, it's just you, and unfortunately, your co-driver. But you know, you have to take care of each other, and that's what makes it so special.
Well, there you go, Doug. See, she said it yourself. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of me driving the car. Just accept that I know what I'm doing.
I'm not afraid of you driving the car. I am afraid of you driving the car.
What?
we almost took us into a ditch, but anyway.
We got to go on to this again?
No, we're not going to get sidetracked on this. But
The co-driver-driver relationship, you know, I want to work on a little bit.
It's his fault. He doesn't trust me.
You don't listen to me.
This is the one place where you really have to give yourself completely to the person sitting next to you. If you have to have absolute trust in the person on the other side of the car, or the, you know, you're not gonna get to experience the full breadth and depth of what rally can give you.
So what I've just gotten there is, Doug, I trust you.
Aw.
See? We're making strides here. And you don't say anything, which makes me think that you don't trust me.
Why do I suddenly feel like Big Cat here?
I trust you.
So, Brad, we've kept you much longer than we had originally anticipated, and I thank you very much for staying with us. But I have one more question and one more comment, if you don't mind. First, a comment, happy birthday.
Thanks
so much. I saw that on Facebook, so very, very happy that you were willing to join us on your birthday. What does Brian Korn Racing have planned for 2013? Anything solid that you can share with us?
Nothing solid that we can share just yet, but we are working towards maybe a full run at Rally America next year, or dare I say that other thing where people jump over other cars while they go under that they might be doing somewhere in Vegas today.
Yeah. Cool.
No, we're exploring some options in both of those. We're also exploring some road race options, and at the very least, I'll run the full rallycross schedule and go back to the championships next year. Probably still dabble in the SECA with the B-Mod car.
Yeah.
But I'm looking to do something much, much more significant with Rally America next year. So we'll see what I can put together.
Well, we've got our fingers crossed for you, and look forward to running into you down at 100 Acre Wood next February.
You can count on it.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us, Breanne. And take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was awesome to have such an accomplished driver, honestly, with such a great story and doing so much in the world of motorsport at the grassroots level, which we all know is where it's most important. And it's a perfect segue, actually, into our rally section. And the first story that we had, actually, was that Rally America is returning to the Lake Superior Rally in 2013. So this rally was actually not, I believe, not on the championship this season. It was from on the national championship from 2005 to 2009, and it's been re-added for 2013 mainly, and this is what I find encouraging and awesome, is that it was strong support from the host city and the local businesses within that area lobbying to have that rally brought back to the national championship.
Sean?
Yep.
I'm smelling road trip.
Oh, I know, right? When is the rally? What did it say?
October.
I'm gonna be back.
You'll be back.
Yep, and I'm gonna have some money to run, you know, run out there and see the event. So I think we should do it. I think it would be awesome.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So, if it was anything like our 100-acre wood trip this year, that was an amazing road trip.
Oh, it was. That was a brilliant road trip.
Oh, it was.
I had a ton of fun. I just wish that Dana would have let me drive the Falcon a little bit more than what
nope.
it did.
Nope.
Yep.
Nope. I didn't get to drive it.
No, I know, right?
So. Oh, you see, every time I came out and I told you that I trust you and I said nice things about you, and here you are, smacking me across the face with your slander and your banter. What the hell is this? I'm extending an olive branch. In the other hand, I may have a sword, because if you reject the olive branch again, I'm going to kill you.
Well, my little black Focus, of course, is now my rallycross car. And so when you come back next year, we'll have to go. We'll co-drive.
Oh, there we go.
We'll share that ride. And
oh, that'd be excellent.
So I'll trust you with my car. How about that?
All right, fair enough. And then I'll beat you with your car, and then and then you'll be pissed about that. And yeah, then we'll be bitching about that on the show next year.
So, we missed a rally.
What's that?
We missed a rally that was in our area.
What did we miss?
The Prairieville Farm and Forest Rally over in southeast Missouri on the... It's kind of just east of Salem. They're closer to the Mississippi River.
Oh, nice.
It's like, how are we not at this event? Doggone it.
I know. That could be our next year, that could be our test event before we go to 100 Acre Wood in 2014.
Yes.
So
actually, I saw the entry list, and it was pretty small.
Nice. We'd have a good chance.
But with this just mad, insane VW Bug. Was there and do you remember seeing? Well, yeah, you remember seeing that car.
Yeah,
hey, the guy's insane. I love it. So anyway, yeah, we need to go to that next year. And there's some fun stuff happening in WRC.
Yes, there is. The FIA met. The FIA was meeting to discuss kind of the long term plan for the WRC, because obviously we've had kind of a traveling shit show the last couple years this last year, honestly, with the North One Sport deal going all to hell in a handbasket. And this year we had the Red Bull Media House arm coming on board to, and Sportsman Media coming on board to start to plan anyways the road going forward. Now, the interesting thing about this particular story is that the verbiage that was used in the article, and this obviously being an article from Autosport, talked about really the long-term investment that Red Bull Media House and Sportsman Media both have to the WRC. I mean, we're talking a 10-year deal here, which is actually really nice. It was said that Red Bull Media House came into this knowing that, you know, hey, we might not see a profit within that first year, or hell, even maybe the first couple years. But what we're really looking to do is invest and down the road start turning that profit. And the WRC has a couple of things they got to work on. One, they need to make sure that people can really can really promote the events and get good television coverage. And really, secondly, it's all coming down to just really promoting the brands. That was one of the biggest problems that they had, was brand promotion. Obviously, Volkswagen coming into the sport, they're looking for promotion on their VW arm. They already have great promoting through their GT series with their Lamborghinis. They have Audi as well, tons of Audi sports cars. I follow Audi on Facebook, Audi Motorsport on Facebook, and those guys always have a ton of things going on all around the world. And then obviously their much world-renowned sports car program, which actually their drivers won the WEC Drivers' Championship not long ago. I think it was this past weekend, actually. So, but yeah, really just kind of looking at the series and how can we promote this and promote growth as well as exposure to bring in manufacturers, to bring in sponsors, and really promote the product. And to me, that is absolutely a huge deal, because that's what the WRC needs. That's what it's needed for the longest time. And I think by bringing these guys in and really working this angle You know, this is going to be a great thing for the WRC, and I think, you know, even with the loss of Ford as a title sponsor for the M Sport team, I think that we could see a lot of promising things if this goes well within the first season or two. I'd give it probably 2 seasons, mainly because, you know, obviously you don't want to promote, or you don't want to come off of the first season saying, oh yeah, everything's great, and then have something slump the second year. So I think really after maybe the second year, and if it continues to go well, I think that we could really see some expansion of the WRC, and obviously we'll never get to the golden age of rally like it was in the Group B days, but you know, I mean, I really think that we could kind of get back to where we were there in the late 90s.
Yeah, I hope so, and I'm glad they're taking a longer term look at this. You know, I hate the really short term focus that so many people have right now, and we'll talk. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. And so I'm happy that at least someone in the sport is looking down the road, if you'll forgive the pun. You know, a bit longer than just the next quarter, the next race, or even just the next season. Really stretching it out, thinking about their long term success. So. Good on the FIA and WRC. But
really
speaking of the FIA,
let's go into their favorite series, and the one that seems to get the only love anymore, it seems. But the Formula One World Championship was actually on track here this past weekend in India for the Indian Grand Prix, which we talked about. You know, I like the track. I like the direction that they're going. And it was a decent race. I mean, it was one which obviously Red Bull took a good, obviously dominated, honestly. Oh, it looks like we've had kind of a technical issue here. Are you still there, Doug?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right.
What?
And it looks like it was Brienne. I think Brienne hung up or something happened.
Oh, yeah.
So we will just go ahead and ex-nay that call, say.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Sorry about that. Yeah, moving on, though. We were in India for the Indian Grand Prix. Red Bull was really the class of the field all weekend, both through practice, qualifying, and then eventually into the race. So Red Bull, I mean, just – I mean – I was going to write an article. Granted, I had some office complications that you know, plus school, I couldn't get it out there. But Red Bull at this moment is doing what a championship team does. They have shown up when it is time to perform, and you're in the clutch, and you're in the shit, and you need to get out there and perform. That is what this team is doing, and this is what separates champions from wannabe champions. And obviously Ferrari is a championship caliber team, the most successful team in Formula One. But right now is the time and this home stretch when teams need to be performing at the highest level they have been all year, and they are not showing up to the dance party. And even if they are, Red Bull is one up on them. So, and it makes it almost seem like they're not even at the dance party.
You know, yeah, Red Bull is, you know, it used to be you kind of pointed and laughed at Red Bull, right?
Oh, yeah.
And especially Christian Horner.
After Jaguar.
Yeah. But, man, they have a seriously strong professional crew. And, you know, I think chief amongst them, and I know people are probably tired of hearing me talk about this, but Adrian Newey.
Yeah.
I mean, the man is a god.
He
stands alone. You know, there is no one who can compete with the air development prowess of Newey, and the way that they've caught up after kind of a sketchy start to the season is really amazing. And they're right now back where I thought they were going to be at the start, back with Vettel, Webber 1-2 week in, week out, and I really don't see any reason why we're not going to see that continue through these last remaining races. These last remaining circuits really, really favor the way the Red Bull is working right now. And they really don't favor McLaren with the troubles that McLaren has been having with their tires. Here at the Indian Grand Prix, even Button was having tire issues. And you know, we all know that Button has always been very easy, very very kind to tires, unlike
almost
Hamilton.
Caresses.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, we expect these kind of problems from Hamilton, who is extremely aggressive, very harsh on his tires. But you know, so if Button is also having problems, then you know, there's something inherent in the chassis, really, that's wearing on those tires. And you know, these next remaining races, they're all tilkadromes,
yeah,
aren't they?
What we've got, Austin,
Abu Dhabi, Austin, and where? Well, Brazil isn't. Brazil yeah. isn't. But
and
Brazil
the tilkadrome at Austin is not really a tilkadrome per se.
Well,
I'll
no,
say.
It looks much more engaging. We'll see how it races when we get there. And you know, this race, yeah, I mean, you looked at the front and it was Vettel gone.
Yep, done.
So if you only looked at P1, it was a boring ass race. But really there was some great action there deeper in the field. And I really enjoyed the race. I enjoyed watching it. I thought it was exciting. I do like Wood. The Bud circuit is a nice circuit if you ask me.
I do. I as circuits go, I like the Bud circuit and I like Abu Dhabi. I know a lot of people don't like to watch the racing in Abu Dhabi, but as far as circuit goes, I like it. I might be the only one, but I like it.
So, yeah. Moving on then.
Speaking of Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. Well, first, real quick before we get to Abu Dhabi, Kimi stays at Lotus. Any comment? Any surprise?
No surprise.
Okay.
Kimi was. I mean, where's Kimi gonna go? With Massa
away
being
from Formula
short.
One.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he is kind of a loose
stay
cannon.
In Formula One, it was going to be a Lotus. You know?
Well, he is kind. Yeah, he is kind of a loose cannon. So you don't really know what he's gonna do. But he's kind of made an intent that he wants to stick around in Formula One a while. And given this year's performance, I think. You know, I think that next year, I think that he really has a chance to do some good things in the Lotus. But I really think that he has a great chance to do really great things next year. We obviously know that that the Renault is a championship-winning car from the past, and you know, Kimi is just is a good wheel man and can get the most out of it. So I look forward to seeing what they can put together next year. Honestly.
Yeah. Oh.
Any comments on that, Kevin? I know we've kind of.
I really enjoy driving the Lotus car.
He's got the Kimi down.
As long as they keep me provided with ice cream sandwiches and vodka, and my boat is nearby, we will win championship.
Don't forget the gorilla suit.
Yeah, you
I wear gorilla suit when I drive car with James Hunt helmet, and we win championship that way.
Nice.
There we go. I think that's it. He's our ringer for the Kimi soundalike contest.
Yeah. Well, I thought we had Kevin, but apparently Kimi has joined us, so he is the one driver to ever be on the show.
Seriously, is there any doubt that Kimi would have stayed with Lotus? I mean, it's just a match made in heaven, honestly.
Oh yeah.
Well, I think the only doubt wasn't whether. He was going to stay at Lotus versus switching to somebody else, but whether he was going to stay at Lotus or not race in Formula One anymore. I think that was the only thing, not that he was going to switch teams.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, Kevin, though, about the match made in heaven, because Lotus is like, hey, dude, can you just drive our car really fast? He's like, yeah, sure. Do I have any other obligations? Not really. All right, then.
No, I mean, and Kimi's shown that Kimi is happy when you let Kimi be Kimi. And he doesn't have the pressure on him that he would at a Ferrari, for example. And I'd heard a lot of people saying, you know, oh, Kimi's going to go back to Ferrari and take Felipe Massa's place. And I'm like, you got to be crazy to think that. Because why is he going to walk back into that pressure cooker? Because he's already been there and he didn't like it.
That's why he left in the first place.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, this is too political for me. I'm out of here. Deuces. But. Yeah, it was good stuff. Looking ahead to Abu Dhabi, and Doug, can you tell us, how did we do on our podium challenge?
On the podium challenge, the results of the race were Vettel, Alonso, and Weber, with right. Alonso pulling out a late race second with really some fantastic driving, some fantastic pit work. But Perez was first out, So we had Vettel, Alonso, Weber, Perez first out. You got 10 points for picking Vettel to place.
Nice.
Which he did with his win. You had Hamilton to win and Button to show, neither of which did.
No. Failures. That's why I don't pick McLaren to do anything. They always let me down and piss me off.
And Mike, his points were Vettel to win and Alonso to show.
All right.
And so he got 15 points for Vettel and 5 for Alonso.
What?
He got 15 points for Vettel for win, and he picked Alonso to show, and Alonso got second. So he showed, so he gets 5 points.
Gosh damn it.
And, well, you're really going to hate me then.
Would you get a grand slam?
Not quite, not quite. I my picks were Vettel to win, Alonso to place, and Button to show. And so I got 15 for Vettel, 10 for Alonso. Of course, Button was not on the podium, and so I got no points for that. And no one picked first out. First out was Perez.
Mm.
You had Grosjean, Mike had Hamilton, and I had Maldonado.
Mm.
So I gained 15 points on you and
doesn't matter.
And 5 points on Mike. So long as I'm not last, if I can beat Mike, I'll be happy.
So how far am I ahead of Mike then?
You have 291. Mike has 239. So you have a 52-point lead.
Is it clenched yet? Well, no, it wouldn't be clenched then. Close. We need
man,
to.
Yeah, I think it. Man, if it isn't, it's darn close. But yeah, it's no, it's not.
The Formula One's the last series running, so, and that's obviously we've only picked from IndyCar, had a couple of rallies, but really only IndyCar and Formula One. So.
By the way, I do have our bet on SpeedGeeks, All Fantasy Racing series. I have that locked down, so I'm very eagerly awaiting my my 10-year Bushmill single malt. So, all right, Abu Dhabi. We go to
Abu Dhabi.
Fantastic, majestic circuit. I know a lot of people don't like this circuit. They see it as, well, it is what it is. It's a Tokidrome, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just the beauty of the circuit, and I can hear PressDog bitching at me already about a beautiful venue. But damn it, it is. I mean, you know,
like
one
it.
Of the things about Formula One that's exciting to me, yes, I love Spa. You know, as we've often mentioned, that's our favorite track, Spa.
Yeah.
But, you know, in addition to the old school Spa, Monaco, I also like the ultra modern, you know, almost futuristic looking venues. That's why I love Singapore. Because it has that super cool modern feel to it, and that's why I like Abu Dhabi. I mean, it's a fantastic place. I don't like, there's some details about the current layout that I do not like, but you know, when you look at the circuit, they could easily change it, and I wish they would. They just don't. Get rid of those little Mickey Mousey bits. As Aaron Nick pointed out in the chat room, Spa is great because Belgians are awesome.
Truth.
But anyway, so yeah, I'm looking forward to this, although I really don't expect it to be a whole lot different than the Indian Grand Prix. I think we're going to see another Red Bull front row and another Vettel domination.
All right, well, that leads us, and I will say, actually, before we get into the podium picks, head over to Target, not really Target, but head over to Chip Ganassi Racing on the Facebook. Chip Ganassi Racing's actually running. Remember when they did the bracket for the best Chip Ganassi driver of all time?
No.
All right. Well, they did. Nice. Wrong answer. But they did that. They did a Facebook tournament and a Twitter tournament where it was like, hey, best Chip Ganassi driver of all time, voted up. So you had this bracket and you voted for the drivers. Well, now Chip Ganassi Racing's taking it a step further here in the off season, and they are running a greatest racing track in the world contest. Now, obviously, all of the favorites are out there. Spa's on the list, Indianapolis, Daytona, Le Mans. I mean, you know, they're really, really a who's who of circuits out there. And the first week's matchup was Indianapolis versus Watkins Glen. You still have time to go over, like Chip Ganassi on Facebook. for all their racing teams, not just IndyCar. And yeah, go ahead and take part. I think it was like for Indianapolis and Cher for Watkins Glen, and Indianapolis was just dominating that particular contest. However, when it comes down to Indianapolis versus Spa, especially after some of the topics we're about to talk about, I may lean at Spa.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we're getting to that part because it's next. That's a good. Well, we'll do our podium picks first.
Yes.
I will pick first, and I will say that. Well, I'll say that Sebastian Vettel is going to win. Obviously, I'll say that it will be a second place by Jenson Button and a third place by Fernando Alonso.
And first out.
I'm going to say, as much as I hate to say it, because I love the boy Kobayashi, but nothing personal, because I do love Kobayashi, but I just have to kind of go against the grain on this one.
Okay. Well, my pick is, you know, and it's interesting that you picked Button for the podium. I'm going to pick his teammate, Hamilton, right after I've talked about, you know, the fact that Hamilton destroys tires. and he does, but the nice thing about Abu Dhabi is it doesn't munch on tires quite as harshly as some other circuits. I mean, it's flat, there's no elevation changes. The little hairpins are going to hurt. But I've got Vettel to win, Alonso for second. I think he continues to race well, even if he doesn't qualify well, and Hamilton in third. So win, place, show, Vettel, Alonso, Hamilton with Senna as first out.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
All right. Well, we will wait for Mike to make his picks. Sorry, Kevin, I would add you into the championship mix, but I think it's going to have to wait till next year because then you'd actually have to finish behind Doug, and we all know that's not going to happen.
Hey, that's okay. I don't feel like being a one-off effort anyway.
Ah, there you go. Well,
this is not me.
Make the right monetary donation, and Doug may sell you his team.
Oh yes, this is true. And you're right behind Mike. In fact, I think this week I'll overtake Mike.
Oh wow. Well, let's talk about the shit show that's IndyCar. Speaking of ride buying and month of May and all that fun stuff.
Hold on, I'm gonna need a bigger bottle.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. And there's not enough alcohol to drown that sorrow. But, Kevin, you were down at Barber Motorsports Park yesterday, and you did us the honor of snagging a very nice Tony Kanaan interview. So special thank you to you for taking time out of your day to go down there and be a part of that. And you also hooked us up with some other news down there you were wondering about. Why don't you tell us about your time there at Barber Motorsports Park?
Well, it was a very lovely but chilly afternoon at the former mosquito grounds of Leeds, Alabama. And I pulled up and I'm looking around the track and I'm really telling you, it's great this time of year to hear the V6 turbocharged engines echoing about the grounds out there, especially since we're in a 6-month off season here.
Yeah, can only imagine.
So I pulled into the paddock and drove down. This was the awesome part right here, because you never get to do this at a track, but I got to pull down the hill into the paddock and then all the way across, and I'm driving by, and I'm like driving by the two Ganassi haulers and then Kimball's hauler and then a coin hauler, and then way down at the end of the strip there is the KV hauler all by itself. Benito, the PR agent for Tony Kanaan, told me just to pull up and park at the hauler. So that was kind of a fun experience right there, was not having to walk the hills of Barber Motorsports Park. But I got down there, and I parked, and I talked to Benito, and I was waiting on TK to come out. And I noticed a all-black Dallara sitting there. And come to find out, I noticed that it just had a simple Chevrolet logo on the side of it. And then I noticed there was a second pit box set up. So automatically, everything in my head is starting to tell me that there's something afoot here. So I'm standing there waiting on Kanaan to come out of the hauler to talk to me. When all of a sudden, one Simona Di Silvestro stumbles out of the back of the KV hauler. So she looks at me and we recognize each other because she knows me because we've spoken a lot. And she looks at me and she says, "What are you doing here?" And I look at her and I say, "Well, the bigger question is, what are you doing here?" So, yeah. So we just kind of chatted for a minute and she went about her business. And then TK came out. We were going to conduct the interview out behind the KV hauler there at Barber. But the problem was it was about 50 degrees with a good 15 to 20 mile an hour wind blowing.
Burr.
Yes.
Not to mention massive wind noise.
Yes, massive wind noise. And I'd already discussed it with a couple of the KV crew guys, was the fact that I was even surprised that Firestone was allowing them to run yesterday because it was so cold.
Yeah.
But,
well, 50 degrees, that's right near their limit, right?
Is yeah, that's
50 degrees the magic number that they have to have?
50 degrees is the magic number, but as I understand, the track temperature was hot enough to be safe.
Okay. Because the 50-degree mark is 50-degree track temperature, right?
Yes. And we were laughing about it because just last week in Birmingham, the temperature was 85 degrees. So it's like, we'd had this huge swing, but we stepped into the hauler, had a really good chat with Tony Kanaan. We talked about his new teammate a little bit too, and it was great to be able to spend the evening with the KV crew guys out there. It was great.
Well, people have really been enjoying your article, your interview there on the site. We've had fantastic reviews, comments about it, and just mad amounts of people just coming from all over the place to read it. So that's been fantastic. And I read it, and it's a really, really nice interview. If y'all haven't read it yet, then definitely go to openpaddock.net and check it out. It's a great piece of work.
Faux show.
And basically, what I was trying to do was not only just talk about racing stuff, but kind of give people a flavor for what he's like on a personal level as well. And he's just such a great guy to be around. I mean, all exactly what you thought. He was smiling and happy the whole time. We had some good laughs and stuff too. So,
oh, nice. All right. Well, while talking IndyCar, let's talk about you already had talked about Simona KV, but as we said, that's actually not a partnership though, as once was first believed.
No, there was a lot of discussion going on about that previously, that it would be a partnership between KV and HVM Racing, but it's just a straight up Simona has signed with KV Racing.
So is there still going to be a partnership with HVM? That was something that Racer Magazine had put out just a few days ago. Is that deal kind of falling flat, or is that still in the works, but just separate from the Simona deal?
Jimmy Vassar says that deal is flat.
Okay.
That's what he said on Twitter the other day, was that it was not a deal between KV and HVM. It was just straight up driver signing. Now, that doesn't mean that HVM won't enter into an agreement with someone. I mean, I could see them entering into agreement with maybe like Ed Carpenter or someone like that, or EJ Viso is looking to start his own team. There's been some rumor.
I just want to ask if you got a feel about whether he was actually going to do that or whether he was staying with KV.
You know, Viso's got a lot of money behind him, and as I understand, KV is running two cars next year, and one of them is Kanaan and the other is DiSilvestro.
Okay.
Now, the rumor had been that EJ Viso was starting his own team, and he was doing it with Brian Herta.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know about that, because a lot of the Brian Herta operation, as you know, is a technical alliance with Sam Schmidt Motorsports.
Right.
I don't know how receptive Honda's going to be to adding another car. Clearly, they have the ability more than Chevrolet does. But I would think that with Viso's past history with HVM, that maybe that's a better option for him.
You know, I had wondered when I started hearing about the whole Team Viso and Viso wanting to start his own IndyCar team, if maybe he wouldn't pull in Ricky Juncos in as partner. Do you have any feelers out on in regards to that at all?
I have not heard that mentioned at all, but I can contact the people at Hunkos and maybe do some digging.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. So, well, it's that time. Obviously, there's a gigantic elephant in the room with us in the IndyCar segment. And
that's
that
not nice to say about me.
Nah, I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about Doug.
Hey, I'm working on it, man. I'm working.
You're fine. No, let's talk about what happened late last – what was it? What day was it? Sunday, I think, is when we found out. Yeah, it was Randy Bednarik. Well, as we were told, step down. Anytime I personally ever hear the word step down in a corporate CEO position, I hear fired.
That's yes, I mentioned that exactly to someone this this past weekend talking at a conference that I was at.
Yeah, there was an emergency meeting of the board in which Randy Bednarik and IndyCar felt that it was best to go separate ways. However, the separate ways weren't very separate because Randy Bednarik was kept on as an advisor to IndyCar. So I don't really understand what the hell is going on. But basically, it's the article that we've been talking about, the one that we thought we had put to bed long ago and that you rightly mentioned a couple weeks ago, Doug, that, why is it still around? And here's why it's still around, because it's actually come to fruition, and Randy is out as CEO, which in my mind is just – I mean, I still don't think it's fully sunk in to me anyways that you know, Randy Bednarik is going to be no longer the CEO of IndyCar. And at the moment, we have Jeff Belskis, who is the interim CEO, and he wanted to stress intern, but I really don't give a shit what he wants to stress because their company's a disgrace – for what it's done and its behavior. Actually, if you get a chance to go over, you probably already have if you're an IndyCar fan, go over and read Robin Miller's awesome article at speed.com talking about, or speedtv.com talking about, you know, you can't cure stupid. And, you know, I mean, honestly, okay, there's so many different ways we can attack this angle. Mike actually had a really good some really good comments I'm going to pull up while we talk about it. But, I mean, this behavior, it's finally come to fruition. I mean, honestly, it is just simply, I mean, I don't even know what to say, honestly, about it. It's heinous in my mind that a group of people can work so actively. I mean, you know, can you just imagine if IndyCar team owners would have put this much effort into making the series a success instead of bitching about what's going on with the championship? We'd probably be in a hell of a lot better place than where we're at right now.
Oh, I.
But instead, we choose to destroy the one good thing. And granted, naturally, I haven't agreed with everything that Randy's done. I thought that a couple of the gimmicky kind of things were stupid, but I think for the most part, he's what the sport needed, a fresh perspective on the championship, on a fresh approach on how to do things. And they've basically told him to screw off. And not only has Indianapolis Motor Speedway made themselves look like a joke, but they've made IndyCar look like a joke. And Mike, he had a great article. He actually, you know, wrote to me and you, Doug, and was like, hey, I really wish you could be on the podcast. I have nothing but burning hatred for the decision to can Randy. Yeah, I didn't agree with everything he did, but for the most part, he was fantastic for the series. And the new car turned out to be fantastic this year, despite my misgivings for Dallara. The racing was top-notch. The double-wide restarts have been mostly great. Bo Barfield was a fantastic addition to IndyCar, and he focused on rebuilding the road to Indy, he being Randy Bednarik. Now, and really the whole entire shop there at IndyCar. And, you know, granted, we can say, well, Tony George was originally who had the idea, but I think Randy Bednarik really did well in promoting the road to Indy. Mike follows on to say he talks a little bit about TV and numbers and the Versus deal now at NBC Sports Network. And he says, I don't know what the answer is, but it's clear that IndyCar is fighting battles over anthills. There's such a small niche group of U.S. fans that are interested in anything other than NASCAR. USAC, ALMS, Grand-Am, IndyCar, they're all fighting over the secondary interests of NASCAR fans or battling over the interests of a little niche group of diehard fans who get on message boards and spout venom about everything except their favorite series.
Track form.
And I think that hits it right on the head. IndyCar is in a position to be in a very competitive field with the likes of sports car, whether it be ALMS or Grand-Am, and now, you know, they're obviously together. You've got USAC out there. You've got you've got, you know, all the various sports cars. You've got the growing numbers of United States fans of Formula One and the V8 supercars. People are really taking onto the V8 supercars, especially now that, you know, Nissan's unveiled their Altima that they'll be racing in the V8 championship. I mean, there's a lot of things out there, and the United States motorsport fan as a whole is morphing. And what IndyCar's done with this is actually take IndyCar steps back.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're really fighting, like he says, you're fighting over this small group of people, and you're doing everything in your power, and you know, to screw your championship. And there are people out there who are more than willing to come on board and take your viewers and take your fan base, who is now sick and damn tired of the way that you're running business because you guys don't know your head from your asshole. And you're losing these fans. And this is why the sport cannot grow. And it's something that Roger Penske said very well. You know, no business can run with a senior management change every 2 years. And I just, for the life of me, I don't understand why IndyCar can't get it through their thick head. And now I'll get off my soapbox and open up the floor.
Well, the problem I see it is twofold. Number one, you've got the people at the top who seem like they want to do everything in their opportunity to absolutely screw themselves over. Once they get a good thing going, somebody's going to get all butt hurt and complain about it, and they're going to talk to other team owners, and then you're going to get the rumbling about something changing, and then you suppress all those rumors. No, that's not what's happening. When it's creating this fest boil, so to speak, and eventually that thing's got to pop, and that's what you saw here. I heard a lot of people say that it was Tony George that was kind of stirring the team owners up after Indianapolis this year, and that was really when Robin Miller started reporting his rumors and things like that. But Tony was able to convince the sisters that what Randy was doing was not enough, and he had the numbers to back it up. I mean, let's be honest here. The TV numbers this year were not good at all.
They dropped by double digits, didn't they?
Yeah. I think that's something that everybody recognizes as being a serious problem with the series. So you've got the people at the top, and, you know, another problem is, all right, I like Randy. I want everybody to understand that. And I'm a big Randy Bernard supporter, and I think it's absolute bunk that he got fired. But he also made some pretty hefty guarantees and claims when he came in. And I remember him saying that after 5 years on the job, that if things weren't better, then he felt like he deserved to go. And if you're looking at TV numbers, you actually took a step back this year. So
true.
He kind of set himself up for that one.
True on that standpoint, yes.
Yeah, so it's really a slippery slope because, I mean, they hired Randy Bernard, which was a great hire. So if they could hire him, then why can't they hire someone better than him?
Well, now Mike brought up a great point, and then I'll get to your point, Doug. Not including you. But Mike said that, you know, when they were talking about Randy Bernard said, you know, he made his proposal basically to leave, or he wanted basically Bernard ousted so they could bring in a management team to run it. He never wanted control of the championship himself. However, his deal, if I believe it right, and I could be misinterpreting the dates and I apologize if I am, but the deal was on the table until the 18th. Mm-hmm. And then the day after, when the deal was no longer on the table, then all of a sudden Randy steps down, citing a conflict of interest. But the deal's over at that point.
Right.
There's no conflict of interest because your deal's off the table. So, I mean, it's just sketch. There's some sketchy, you know, obviously we don't have all the details and we're all speculating, and it very well could have been Randy Bednar said, hey, I'm sick of dealing with this shit, I'm out of here. But at the same point in time, it's like, you know, not everything's really adding up, because, you know, it's not a conflict of interest if that deal had not been accepted. Yet at the same time, IMS is parallel saying, oh, we like Randy. We just approved his budget. We just approved this and that. But at the same point, it's like, well, it looks like you've already set the plans in motion to bring in a another team to lead the series. And I think Steve, and I apologize for butchering his name, but Steve Wittich on Twitter brought up a great point that when you look at IndyCar and then you look at ALMS and Grand Am and their merger and how those two PR stories played out, that will make a fine case study. In how PR goes forward. And I think he's completely right, because I think IndyCar straight shit the money bet on this one, and Grand Am played their change in direction just right. And I think, you know, it would have been different had IndyCar been forthright and honest, or at least the IMS board had been forthright and honest with us and said, hey, it's probably not going to happen. We're probably going to end up losing him and bringing in this management team. I think it would have been different than,
you know, it kinda,
screwing everybody.
It kind of makes me think about having been in McDonald's and then having been in Zaxby's restaurants. In McDonald's, if you want an extra cup of barbecue sauce for your French fries, they have a sign that says there's a 25-cent surcharge for extra condiments. If you go to Zaxby's, they say, enjoy an extra Zax sauce for 25 cents. IndyCar is being like cold and harsh about it and telling you that there's a surcharge for enjoying the extra sauce, while with the Grand Am ALMS merger, they're like, hey, we're making this better, and this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's about the approach, you know? And they, oh my goodness, if IndyCar is going to move forward, they have to approach fans better with what their plans are. They can't just use your corporate synergy, shifting the paradigm and Twittering your Facebook, I mean, buzzwords. They've got to actually develop a relationship with their fans, which is something IndyCar hasn't had for a long time. Because, and that brings me to my second point of part of the problem, is the fact that, yeah, it is the fans. I mean, I read a lot of websites, I read a lot of forums, and it almost seems like IndyCar fans sometimes hate their sport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a subsect of fans out there that if IndyCar came to them right now and said, hey, we're going to put the engines back in front and we're going to only run ovals and we're going to make it like it was in 1985 when the driver died every other week, they would be just fine with that. And it's sad because IndyCar gets so wrapped up in its own nostalgia that they can't move forward for wanting to stay backwards. And while I'm a fan of traditionalism and maintaining the traditions of the sport, sometimes you have to step out and do something different, like Randy Bernard was trying to do, and like they've done with the DW12, and like they've done with bringing in drivers from all over the world and trying to sell them as the world's most versatile drivers. That has been good, but it's the fans just need to let people do what they do and trust that they're doing it well.
Yeah.
Until proven otherwise.
I agree. And you know, I think so much, and Doug, I'm going to get to you right after this point, but I keep telling you, but I promise after this point, I'll get to you. It's just like, you know, everybody expects that just when somebody comes in, everything's going to change immediately. Everything's just going to get better. Everything's going to get worse. Or we're going to see, you know, steps taken. And, you know, really, it's just like Penske said, and it's just like I've said with drivers, honestly, as well. You know, drivers at these teams, like Formula One, it seemed a couple of years ago, it seemed like people were changing every other day, were changing teams. And in IndyCar, it was kind of the same, too. You cannot build success off of constant change. You have to just, you know, realize that, hey, we were in a really crappy spot there for a while in IndyCar. And, you know, Bernard, even after 2-3 years, he's not going to be able to change every single aspect and make every single aspect better. This is not going to happen. you got to work with what you have or what you walked into, much kind of like the politics, and I'm not going to get into them with the election coming. But, you know, when people come into office, they naturally inherit the problems of the people before. They inherit some of the good things as well and can label claim to those, which Randy Bernard was able to do in a couple instances. But a lot of it, you know, is he was trying to set that foundation and trying to build IndyCar into a reputable championship. And I love what one of the Twitter followers of the site and of my account personally as well said to me. He said, you know, he said he's very disappointed to hear about Randy Bernard's demise at IndyCar. Millionaires won, fans zero, pathetic. And he said fans should remind them that we dictate if the product is good. Randy made an okay product, world class. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that comment. IndyCar was a laughing stock, honestly, up until when Randy Bernard took control and started to build on some of these ideas that Tony George had, and honestly, I think made them better. And you know, it's just he inherited a lot of problems as well, though, and from the split and everything like that. And you're just not going to rebuild those as fast as what everybody wants in this day and age of here, now, must have change immediately. And Doug, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you for your opinions.
You know, I think I'm right in line with you guys in that we had things set up to move in the right direction. Yes, the TV numbers were atrocious this year. That was an enormous failure on behalf of the league management, and I'll put that at Randy's feet. You know, since he's CEO, you know, he needed to be there being the big cheerleader, I guess, the biggest cheerleader for the sport and trying to get those ratings up. However, having said that, you know, that can't be the only thing that you look at. Yes, it's important. Of course it's important. But we look at the on-track product. We look at the product that IndyCar has to sell. And this year, oh, wow, was it great. I mean, mm-hmm. we had gone from, you remember when we went to Kansas with the boys from F1B.
That was a great trip, that was.
Oh, it was. It was brilliant. And it was like, I was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
I was too.
Embarrassed
that, you know, hear these Formula One guys say, you know what, yeah, let's go to an IndyCar race. And they had to go see that one. And I'm like, oh.
Shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it was like, oh, you know, please don't make this the only one you see. Please watch another. Because it was boring as hell. But, that, you know, if you remember, that's when Brian Barnhart, oh, I couldn't remember his name. I tell you what,
he is a forgettable character.
He was dead to me, right? He just stricken from my memory. But anyway, that's when Brian Barnhart had all these goofy aero rules. And it made a track like Kansas, which had produced some outstanding racing. You know, I remember, who was it? It was Vitor Mira. I think it was Tony Kanaan and Buddy Rice. Those three pretty much crossing the line, three abreast in 2004, if I remember right. But anyway, it had produced some really great racing. And then we got that. And so, you know, I look at those seasons and how pathetic the racing was with, we still have a single chassis, right? Mm-hmm. But at least we've got multiple engines, which we didn't then. We've got a great aero package that allows for fantastic oval racing that isn't pack racing, but proper oval racing. And a great road course package as well. I mean, tell me the road course racing has not been outstanding this year. And so all these things really coming together and positioning IndyCar to really move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like we have the legs cut out from under us. And, you know, Nick has a good point. If Randy's out, then what about Bo Barfield?
Oh, yeah.
Is he safe?
Is anybody safe at this point?
You know,
I mean, Jesus.
Bo has been really, really good. You know, as with any official, we're going to gripe, right?
Naturally.
You know, in the NFL here in recent weeks, people have griped. But did we gripe as loudly as when we had the replacement refs?
No, we certainly didn't gripe as much as when we had Brian Barnhart.
Yeah, and that was going to be the analogy that I made. Was, you know, Barnhart was like the replacement refs, right? He's kind of out of his league. And
I know, we'll restart in the rain. Woo!
Yeah, right. The track's wet. Green flag, boys.
So,
Delara, get ready for payday.
You know, I think this is a big mistake. Not that I agree with everything that Randy has said or done. I think he's made some gaffes that have unfortunately driven some fans away. But I think he's done some good things that have attracted fans. And we look at the attendance at the racetrack, and it's much better now than it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, you remember that last race at Kansas.
Oh, my God, that was depressing.
Oh, it was hideous. Or the race at Milwaukee. Now, you know, one of the things that, and this was brought up on Trackside, Kurt and Kevin's show, that you know, there may be more to this than just the TV numbers. You know, it might be an issue of sanctioning fees.
It could be.
And that a lot of people have been getting deals, and not sure that the league can really afford that. So. I'm not sure we understand really the full, you know, the full scene, or I don't think we have the entire real picture. We're just kind of glimpsing little shadows of what's going on. But yeah, I'm disappointed by this. I think it undermines some of the momentum that we had, and of course it just completely chops out any continuity that we had.
Yeah. Well, moving forward, because we are kind of running out of time with only about 8 minutes to go, and we still got a couple things to cover here. We're going to pass on the op-ed question there at the end. I really wish we could have hit it tonight, but we're saving it.
I think we kind of did.
Yeah, we kind of did, and maybe something that we can attack next week if the news week is slow. But Mike let me know on a couple things. He said he's pretty sure that he has a good feeling that there's some kind of big industry news coming down that has to do with IndyCar. So we're going to wait and see exactly what that is. He didn't really allude to much, but it was something he felt that something big was coming down from some of the things that he read.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have to a degree. Speaking of that, we go into the IndyCar in Italy. Rumors are still flying. Great article on Autosport there. Dr. Minetti, a spokesman for the organizing committee behind the race, told Autosport the deal has been agreed with IndyCar for a race next September. I can confirm that Italy will have a round of the 2013 IndyCar Series and that the race has been fixed for September, because as you remember, there was a large gap between the races there. Minetti told Autosport, we cannot tell which circuit will be used because there are options, but the choice is now imminent. So the three choices were Monza, which is probably not going to happen, but
no.
It was on the docket. Imola, which maybe. I would love to see that track get used for something because it's a phenomenal circuit, as well as Mugello. So really Mugello and Imola are the only ones on the table, and I think Mugello leads, honestly, in that category.
That's a nice circuit when I see MotoGP run there. That's a nice, nice circuit. I'd like to see IndyCars run there.
Kevin, what do you got for us?
I've always been a fan of Imola myself. It's just I think it's just the traditional angle of it. I just love the track. And Imola, I mean, Mugello to me has always been more of a testing track feel. So I've heard like, one rumor I've heard is that Fiat would be coming to IndyCar, and that would make sense since Dodge is leaving NASCAR altogether, and he's got the whole Chrysler-Fiat angle going there. And I know that Dodge likes their motorsports presence, so that might be interesting. There's any number of options.
Can I leave you with a manufacturer name?
Okay.
There may be some rumor from decent sources anyways. I mean, how all this plays out, but you know, again, we'll play the where there's smoke, this kind of maybe a little bit of a flame. Alfa Romeo.
Well, that's part of the Fiat group, right?
Well, it is, but that being the brand that they think is going to be entered into IndyCar under the Fiat empire, they're thinking Alfa Romeo may return. but Alfa Romeo will be that manufacturer, and they think that an announcement of an IndyCar race in Italy, not only does that play well for Dallara, and say what you will about Dallara, they've been a great, 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 great help to IndyCar, but it looks like maybe some Alfa Romeo news could be in the pipeline.
You know, that would make a lot of sense, because I believe the last bit of oil that an Alfa Romeo sprayed on the track in India is almost dry.
Nice.
And they're due for a new coat.
All right. Well, guys, I hate to cut it short there, but I'm going to say thanks to everybody. We're going to get in the ETV calendar, but before we do that, we're going to get in the announcement. Kevin, you joined us tonight not only because you were at the Barber track, but because next week is my last show for quite a long time, up until probably May, honestly. I'll still be around the site and doing all that. But as my time draws near to serve Uncle Sam in a different time zone that is not really conducive to podcasting, I guess we'll see what happens. You are going to be taking the reins from me as the host after next week. So we'll have you on next week. It'll be all of us on the show, Mike, Doug, me, you, a real party atmosphere as I say goodbye for quite a few months, and you will take the reins. So welcome, I will say. You've done great things for us on the obviously on the website aspect of it, and it's only right that you come and join the show in my stead. So welcome.
Well, I shall keep the chair warm and partially clean.
Indeed.
I don't know what scares me more, the fact of thinking that Alfa Romeo could be coming back to IndyCar or the fact that Sean Peachin is protecting our country.
You know, there's a lot of people who don't quite understand it, honestly. But you know what? I might not be the best. I might not be the best at the whole motorsports gig, but I'll tell you what, doing this job is the one thing that I can do right. So it is the one thing that I'm good at. But
well, we certainly appreciate your service, Sean.
Well, thank you. So, let's talk about the ETV calendar here in the winding up moments here. Join us Sunday, November 4th at 8 p.m. for the Stock Car Evolution or the ESRL Elite Pro Series Chase Race number 8 from Texas Motor Speedway. After finishing third last week at Martinsville, points leader Warren Peet is struggling to hang on to a one-point lead over Phillip Stocks, who took the trophy home last Sunday night. Live from Texas Motor Speedway, it's going to be J.D. Webb and Matt Close bringing flag-to-flag coverage starting at 7:50 p.m., a great championship battle on hand for that. So if you're bored Sunday at 8 p.m., I definitely recommend watching that. Monday, November the 5th. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, and the winner is Motorsports Show with Wesley Outland, Mike Neff, and Justin Rosenau, featuring news from local dirt tracks, driver interviews, and the best in late model dirt and asphalt racing. So great grassroots stuff going on there. Be sure to tune in. Wesley's a great guy, hugely funny. I love listening to the show. Monday, November the 5th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Real Sim Racing Full Throttle Cup Series live from Texas Speedway. Talks between RSR and ETV live in the last 2 weeks have concluded with RSR signing a renewal for 2013. Also adding another full series to be announced later. Points leader Landon Huffman finished behind NASCAR Camping World truck driver Parker Klingerman. That's popular there for you. Who led all but one lap at Martinsville, and Guy Snyder slips down to 50 points behind, down by two from last week. And then obviously Tuesday, November 6th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, we have Open Paddock Live on ETV Live for the fans, by the fans, raw and unabridged. Myself joining you for my finale for the offseason. Doug is going to be here. Mike Weitzel, Kevin Neely, bringing you the latest in open wheel and rally sports car auto racing with updates from the Izod IndyCar Series, Maserati Indy, and maybe some driver interviews, maybe some WRC news. We'll definitely be talking about Formula One at Abu Dhabi, so be sure to join us. Same bat time, same bat channel next week. Boys, do you have anything else for us?
Keep it off the wall, folks.
Indeed. Doug?
Over the off season, I'm hoping to kind of share my experience with prepping my new autocross machine. So look for that.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Have a great night. And as always, please be safe. And we'll talk to you next week.
You're clear.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Sean, that the timing worked out great.
I know. I was like, holy cow, we did that like as close as you, like, just I said goodnight, my computer clock turned to 10. money, dude. Money.
That is hitting the post right there.
It is. That's what old dad does. Old dad takes control.
Good job, guys.
Hey, thanks, JD, as always, man.
Thank you.
You bet. I got to jump over here and see how the boys are doing. I think the race is over with now, but check in on my other crew over here.
All right.
Oh, JD?
Yeah.
I think I've got the show recorded on this side, so I'm going to edit it and post it from over here.
Cool. Saves me some work.
Okay. If if I have issues, I'll send you an email tomorrow.
Yeah, good deal.
All right, man.
All right. Catch you boys later.
I'll see you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, boys.